The Sunday after Easter is a creature of habit. Let me say that again. The Sunday after Easter is a creature of habit. He is risen. You know you're going to get a few of them the Sunday after Easter, right? The Sunday after Easter is a creature of habit. There will be less brass. There is less mass. You heard Clark say earlier there were over 1,000 people in attendance last Sunday. At this time, exactly last Sunday, there were about 495 people in this building. You knew coming today you'd be able to get a seat, didn't you? Place to park as well. It's a creature of habit. You know some things that are just guaranteed to happen the Sunday after Easter. You know you're going to hear the gospel reading you heard. Every year, without fail, Thomas shows up. And every year, probably if Pastor Kevin is preaching the Sunday after Easter, you're maybe going to hear a poem that goes, one account in the gospel story seems to mar Easter's glory, the stubborn refusal of Thomas the twin to believe that Jesus was alive again. Risen from the dead, how can that be? I won't believe it unless I see. And then we usually hear me finish that poem that I wrote a long time ago, talking about how we're a lot like Thomas, both before his encounter with Jesus, and we're called to be a lot like Thomas after his encounter with Jesus. But today, kind of what grabs my attention is not the refuser. Thomas was a refuser. Said so in the text, right? I refuse to believe it. Today, what grabs my attention is not the refuser, but the fact that the disciples, the others, refused to kick out the refuser. When you think about it, the disciples' reaction to Thomas that week is compelling, and it's profound, and it should impact us. So let's be clear about Thomas from the outset. Thomas doesn't merely doubt. Thomas demands. Thomas refuses. It's that first week after Easter, and someday Peter says, Christ is risen. Is what all the other disciples say except for one. Thomas chimes in, no, he's not. That week, for 7 long days. We just hear this story once a year. The disciples live this story 24/7 for an entire week. There had to be moments, you know, where one of the disciples, you know, had a tear in the eye, a smile across the face, a heart as light as a feather and as warm as a fire all at the same time, and said, brother, can you believe that Jesus is alive again? Only to have Thomas chime in, nope. You know, at some moment, one of the women had stood up and said, aren't you just thrilled to know that he who was dead is alive? Only to have Thomas say, yeah, right. For an entire week, this goes on. And a week later, the text today tells us that though the doors are locked, Jesus comes and stands among them. And I suppose what surprises me the most is not that Jesus entered into that locked room. It's that Thomas was still inside that locked room. You know what that means? That means not one of the others, not one of the disciples, not one of the men or one of the women said, let's kick him outside those doors where there is only weeping and gnashing of teeth. How is it that they put up with Thomas for an entire week? For an entire week, they would say, he is risen.
He is risen.
Oh, sure he is, said Thomas. He is risen.
He is risen.
Yeah, right, replied the twin. He is risen.
He is risen.
Give me a break, said the refuser. I refuse to believe it. What do you think? How is it that they refused to kick out the refuser? Where did they find the strength to put up with Thomas? I think they found the strength in these two places. First, they were overwhelmingly convinced that Jesus had risen from the dead. And second, they were undoubtedly certain that no one was beyond Jesus' reconciliation. They were overwhelmingly convinced that Jesus had risen from the dead, and they were undoubtedly certain that no one was beyond Jesus' reconciliation. How could they not be overwhelmingly convinced about the resurrection of Jesus? Luke, as he's writing the book that we know as Acts, records these words. And Jesus, for a period of 40 days, offered many proofs of his resurrection to the disciples, and he spoke to them about the kingdom of God. The disciples knew exactly what a Roman crucifixion squad would do. They never failed. Jesus was dead. He was dead indeed. Thomas affirmed that. The women who had been there beside the cross, watching Jesus tortured and killed, knew that he was dead. Jesus was dead indeed. Thomas agreed with that. Jesus' lifeless corpse had been put into a tomb. Thomas agreed with that. And no one exhumed it. Thomas knew that. Except Jesus himself, through the power of the Spirit. But Thomas wasn't there yet. I refuse to believe. Unless I see, unless I touch, I will not. But the others knew, though once dead, Jesus was, Jesus is alive. He was, he is risen. He stood among them again, even though the doors were locked. He broke bread with them again. Ghosts do not have flesh and blood as I have, nor appetites. He taught them and instructed them once more. Days and hours are not for you to know, but you are to go, to be witnesses, to make disciples, baptize, teach in my name. Let others know of resurrection and life. But for 7 days, one of them, who had not seen him, simply refused to believe. And it's almost hard for me to believe that the others didn't kick out the refuser. Where did they get the strength? They were undoubtedly certain that no one was beyond Jesus' reconciliation. Think about it. Thomas, he refused. But you know, James and John, they snoozed. You know, it's one thing to fall asleep in an easy chair after a long, hard week. It's one thing to nod off while you're watching TV. I intend to do that this afternoon. It's another thing entirely to go to sleep when someone asks you to stay awake with them. And when that one is the one who has come for everyone. But that's exactly what happened. Jesus asked James and John specifically, come with me into the garden. Keep watch. Stay awake. Pray, lest you fall into temptation. Thomas refused, but James and John snoozed. And then awakened to the reality of the resurrection. Awaken to the reality of the mercy of Jesus. Awaken to the reality of his grace and his forgiveness. Restored, renewed, and redeemed, reconciled by Christ, they refused to kick out the refuser. Thomas refused, but Matthew and Bartholomew cruised. One stood their ground. One drew a sword, struck a servant, cut off his ear. But the others fled. The minute Judas and the soldiers show up, they run away. Thomas refused, but Matt and Bart cruised. But when confronted and comforted by the risen Christ, when renewed, restored, redeemed, and reconciled, what do we find them do? They refuse to kick out the refuser. Thomas refused the testimony of the others. Peter restrained the testimony that he could offer. Thomas refused the testimony of the others. Peter restrained his own three times, if you recall. Hey, aren't you one of Jesus' guys? You're a Galilean. Didn't I see you with him in the garden? Surely you must be a follower of Jesus. And each time he replied, no. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know that man. Thomas refused their testimony. Peter restrained his own. But when restored by Christ, feed my sheep, tend my flock, take care of my lambs. When restored, reconciled, renewed, redeemed, Peter refused to kick out the refuser. He was not about to exclude that wayward lamb called Thomas. Which brings us to us. The Sunday after Easter is a creature of habit. We all know that. And sometimes that creature of habit can even kind of disappoint us a bit, right? I mean, where's the pomp and the circumstance of just last week? We have less flowers. We have less children. We have less noisemakers. Well, I don't know if that one's all that bad. We have less worshipers, both members and visitors. And to be honest with you, on that last part, I'm kind of glad about today too. Because there are sometimes you just want to talk about things as a family. And family, I think there's something we need to talk about. We are far too often unlike the disciples during that first week of Easter. Now remember what that week was all about. Thomas could not confess the second or third articles of the Nicene Creed. He would not. He did not. He refused. And yet they didn't kick him out. Now I'm not saying that the second and third articles of the Creed are unimportant. In fact, they are the thing. They're what bind us and draw us together. But have you noticed that far too often we want to put other things on their level? And are far more inclined to kick out those who will not raise an indeed to our preferences or our practices and the non-essentials. I think the flock has probably learned that from the shepherds. We pastors are guilty of that. Oh, did you see that guy? He always wears a collar. Oh, you know what? Look at that guy. He never wears a collar. Oh, that one, his only covers is Adam's apple. Huh, what about that one? It rings his entire neck. Hey, you know, you got to watch out for that guy. He always uses the hymnal. Hey, you got to watch out for that guy. He never uses the hymnal. Hey, beware of that one. Sometimes you get it and sometimes you don't. We are ready to kick, at least, those who do not raise an indeed to our preferences or our practices. And that has transcended into the flock. How often do we kind of see the same thing happening? Can you believe the way they're dressed for church? Do they think they're going to a wedding? Can you believe the way they're dressed for church? Do they think they're going to play golf? What about those hymns? We sing them way too fast. What about those hymns? We sing them way too slow. Why do we always use that instrument or this instrument? We should only use the other. We should never use this. We know what it is at times to elevate our preferences and our practices to the level of needing an indeed from everybody else. We who are readily here to affirm the resurrection, and rightly so, I believe do at times find ourselves snoozing to our calling, cruising from his commanding, and restraining the very thing we are to be heralding. And so for the times we have fallen asleep to our calling, bearing witness to the resurrection, but also bearing with one another. For the times we have strayed and stayed away because of things that have nothing to do with what he has done. For the times we've denied others should really be a part of the community because they're not like us and the things that are not essential. Jesus today enters our locked doors in the little rooms we have in our hearts and our minds. And he says the very thing he said to Thomas, stop it. Trust me. Receive grace. Bestow mercy. Share life. For there is one account in the gospel story that seems to mar Easter's glory. It's the stubborn refusal of Thomas the twin to believe that Jesus was alive again. Risen from the dead, how can that be? I won't believe it unless I see. Yet, the reaction to Thomas's doubt exemplifies Easter's clout. The steadfast refusal of Thomas's brothers to reject him and replace with another. To witness and to welcome, that's our call, till risen indeed is confessed by all. Amen.